Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk.
This week's AEW Collision. Sean, we have our final of the Grand Slam tournament set up. Samoa Joe, Roderick Strong, did you think you would be seeing this match in 2023 with the stakes as they are with your history of watching pretty much the entire careers of both of these wrestlers?
No, it's kind of unexpected. you know, the peak of what they did was about 17 years ago or so, you know, in terms of their peak in the independence. It's hard to believe they're still doing this. It's gone by so quickly. Their time from when they're in Ring of Honor till now, it is surprising that in 2023 they're going to be vying for the a shot at the world title.
So one of the reasons I like having you on tonight, Sean, is to talk about Roderick Strong a bit. You're as familiar with his career and his path as anybody out there. I am really enjoying this character right now. The pouty, bitter friend. I think his kind of deadpan whininess is just pitch perfect for what they're trying to do. I wouldn't call it a guilty pleasure. I think a lot of people are appreciating what he's doing right now. Talk for a minute about Strong's career, his strengths, his weaknesses, his high points, if you think he's had the career he deserves, and round it out to what you think about what he's doing right now and this role he's playing as the jealous friend who doesn't want Adam Cole to have doesn't want Adam Cole to be turned on by MJF, and he also is just bitter that Cole isn't best friends with him.
Yeah, you know, he was, you know, kind of that guy that was really good in the ring and Ring of Honor and didn't have a ton of personality when he debuted, but he was part of that Gen X faction with Alex Shelley and Jack Evans, and he was, you know, just that kind of helped bring those guys up, and you know, he's kind of really transformed his look. He had a lot of bulk to him when he started. I don't know if you remember what he, you know, just that look he had early on. He's just totally transformed his look to bring it full circle. But he kind of just like grew into this, he was known as the Messiah, the Backbreaker, but he never really had a personality beyond in the ring. He hit really hard and put on good matches. And, you know, he's kind of had he went to WWE and he kind of was eventually just faded into the background after, you know, the hot start with the tag team name is drawing a blank on me with Adam Cole. He had to run a good run there, but then he kind of faded. And, you know, later in his ROH career, he kind of achieved that look, and that took him into his WWE days. And he's kind of, I was wondering what he was going to do in AEW, and he's just found this character lately, you know, Adam Cole's whiny friend, and he's just gotten better and better with it. You know, now he's wearing the glasses with the neck brace. You know, he's surrounded by the Kingdom, who are literally cast aside by Adam Cole in this, you know, the storyline terms in Ring of Honor when Cole moved on to Bullet Club and then, you know, left Ring of Honor altogether. And it's kind of, played some fun TV time with Bennett and Matt Taven hanging on with Roderick Strong backstage. He's really kind of found himself, and it's going to be fun to see where he goes from here, where he takes his character, because it's the first time I think he had the diamond mind in NXT, but I didn't, find that all that interesting. It was just, more like him, doing more of what he normally does, but being in a leadership role. But now that he's got this role, I'm kind of interested because for the first time, he's kind of has a character and he's not just Roderick Strong, the really good wrestler.
What do you think he's tried to be, and in terms of his character? Like, how would you describe his history to somebody in terms? Yeah,
I think he's just tried to be himself, you know, to one extent or the other. Whether he's gone, you know, heel or you know, heel or face, just you know, I think he's just tried to be a good wrestler, and then he transformed himself, and he's got a his look, and just he got the right look for TV, and he's just kept on kind of, you know, it just seems like he never got advice along the way of like, you know, hey, you got to do something beyond just being Roderick Strong to get noticed on TV once you get there, because he's got all the talent in the world, but once you get, you know, get out of the independents and get out of, you know, NXT Golden Black era, you got to have something more than just that in-ring to hang your hat on, so to speak, you know? And
yeah, he never jumped off the screen. He was they made fun of him. He's just like this, you know, I think he's just an ordinary dude. He's just a guy.
Yeah,
he's not super tall, not super muscular, not super thin. There's nothing distinct about him. He's just short, dark hair. His promos are just sort of there. There's worse, there's better. But this character is a lot of fun, and he's leaning all in on it, you know, and I think it's relatable, even if he's a little cartoonish about it. But, you know, when you've got your best friend and that best friend is now doing something you disagree with and you're a little jealous at the same time, I think he's tapping into emotions that people have experienced by being in that role, being in one of the roles or observing it amongst their friends. And his demeanor and, you know, the neck brace and Jim Ross's skepticism about how hurt his neck is, and then Taven and Bennett, you know, playing it up. I just think this it's a blast. What do you think happens with Joe and Strong now that that's set up for the final? I mean, I just think people are like, well, of course it'll be MJF and Joe because that's main event worthy, and there'll be some doubt. Maybe Joe could beat MJF for the title. But, you know, the storyline is Joe. I'm sorry, the storyline is Roderick, because Roderick has – Adam Cole is in between Roderick and MJF. So if Roderick Strong somehow beats Joe, maybe by DQ because Joe gets too aggressive or somebody interferes or, you know, whatever, Strong's not going to beat Joe clean. But if somehow Strong advances, to me, you can get a TV match out of that. You can move MJF and Joe to WrestleDream instead. I say get a 2-for-1 out of it and put Strong in the main event and have Cole stuck in the middle in some form or fashion and advance that story, because frankly, right now, people I think are more into seeing MJF in a main event match that involves Adam Cole than they are just a straight up Joe MJF match, which will be amazing. And it's obviously going to happen, but for an episode of Dynamite, yes, it's Grand Slam at Arthur Ashe Stadium, but to me, it's more TV friendly and just kind of fun and storyline based to have Strong somehow advance. What do you think? Do you agree with my premise or my statement there? And then what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I do. I mean, they could go either way, but I think the way they will go is what you said, is that Strong somehow wins with it, you know, interference, you know, to get his title shot. And because that's what people want to see. It just, they go either way. It just depends on where they want to, get him into the title picture.
Yeah.
Either. I mean, this seems like the most natural way to do it. And then, you know, Joe could say he got screwed and get another, you know, set up something for WrestleDream. So I think the most natural way for them to get the two matches out of it, because they've obviously set up, like you said, they've obviously set up Joe and MJF. They've, you know, told viewers that this match is going to happen. It's just a matter of if it's going to happen at Grand Slam or WrestleDream, and it makes the most sense.
John, you're breaking up with on me a little bit there. I picked up just fragments of the last couple sentences you said. Do you want to try again on that, or do you remember what you just said?
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, like you said, they have the two challengers set up.
Two matches.
Two matches for MJF, and they can achieve that most naturally by having Strong move through, and then having Joe go to Wrestle Dream a short time later, because there is such a short gap between the shows. And, you know, I don't think fans would be disappointed waiting for the pay-per-view either, because they'll get that draw. Like, I'm kind of just reiterating what you said, that they'll get that drama that they want out of seeing Adam Cole stuck in the middle. And I think it fits in better first than them putting Joe in the way and then doing it. You know what I mean? It's just a natural fit for Strong to happen first.
Yeah, Sean, you're breaking up a lot of me. I'm not sure if it's my internet or my Wi-Fi or yours.
I'm going to put my wire in.
Fortunately.
I'm going to wire my setup.
Oh, yeah, let's see if that helps. We can try that. In the meantime, I'm going to pause and formally introduce the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, September 9th, 2023. Following AEW Collision, I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, and the website, pwtorch.com. And the host of the Wade Keller Post Shows, following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday on our Red Logo Show. You can find us at WadeKellerPostShow.com to live stream. You can find the direct link to the live streams at the top and bottom of my TV coverage of Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision at our main website, PWTorch.com. That also includes not just a link to the live stream that starts about 5 minutes after the show's end, but also the phone number and email address if you want to participate in the show. And if you are listening to our live stream right now, you are invited to join us right now. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. So when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll flag you on our switchboard. The other voice you hear is Sean Radican. He is a longtime PW Torch contributor. We've been putting up some of his early SmackDown reports from 20 years ago on pwtorch.com. Sean, welcome to the co-host chair here following Collision.
Hey, Wade, how are you?
Good, good. Is it fun seeing those old SmackDown reports you did 20 years ago showing up?
Yeah, because I read through the whole thing, and it's hard to believe the stuff I was recapping, a Bourbon Street bikini brawl or something like that. So the most recent one. So it was, and it was the episode with
John.
Brock.
I wasn't able to hear you there either. We do have some. If I can fix this. Hey, Sean.
Can you hear me?
Yep. We've got some severe.
I'm just trying to wire in
again. Area too. So that. Okay.
Give me one. I'm going in.
Yep.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yep. You were wired and then unwired.
It's working.
Can you hear me?
Is that not working either?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I couldn't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. I'm just trying to wire in one more time.
Hey, Sean, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you now.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll see if we can make it through. But, Sean, you were saying that you're reading through your SmackDown reports, anything stand out? Are you are you surprised by anything you were writing back then about the WWE product?
Just you know, the stuff like the Bourbon Street bikini brawl that I was recapping, and the Brock Lesnar throwing Zach Gow and the one-legged wrestler down a stairs to prove himself to Vince McMahon. Was another thing that was on the show.
Sean, I still can't hear you. Can you can you call in on your phone on our regular line? We'll see if that helps. It won't be the best quality sound, but it's certainly better than you breaking up so much.
Yeah, I'll call in on give me 1 second and I'll call in.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see if that works better. Thanks to everybody for hanging with us here I'll send you the I'll DM you the number on Twitter. All right. So our phone number, if you want to call the show, again, in case you missed it earlier, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard so we know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. On tonight's episode of Collision, Samoa Joe beat Penta in the main event of the show in the semifinal in about 16 minutes with a coquina clutch. And in the match earlier, Roderick Strong beat Darby Allin, although Luchasaurus beat him up before the match and put him at a disadvantage. And then there was some distractions at ringside that worked against Darby also that led to Roderick getting the win in about 15 minutes. So we have what I would call a slightly unlikely match with Roderick Strong and Samoa Joe, although the crowd loves Joe. Hey, Sean, you're patched back in. Is this you? Can I hear you?
Yeah, this is me.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Why do you think they went with the booking of Joe versus Strong? If Joe a heel, is Strong a heel? Like, I know with AEW, sometimes they like to be a little ambiguous about it, or let's let the fans choose, or let's not be too old, you know, quote old school and definitive about it in certain situations. But what do you think they're going for here instead of, yeah, I mean, obviously I have something in mind for the match next week, but I assume fans are going to be cheering for Joe unless people just sort of ironically cheer Roddy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that both guys are set up to be heels against MJF, but when they face each other, I think Joe will be, you know, cheered because Strong is laying it on thicker as the, you know, the lighter heel, you know what I mean? The lighter heel trying to, you know, just whining about everything instead of being the ruthless heel like Joe is. So I think they're just trying to set up two challenges for MJF and keep him, you know, babyface.
What's the best role for Joe? We talked about Roderick in the intro, but what do you think about Joe at this stage? Would you like to see him have a run with AEW World Title? Do you discount entirely that he could beat MJF and MJF goes a different direction with Cole as a tag team and they elongate that storyline and Joe just becomes a badass defending the title, maybe eventually against Bryan Danielson?
I just don't think he's at, like, as hot as MJF, so I don't see any reason for them to, you know what I mean, to make that switch, because I just think MJF is so hot that it would be a detriment right now to take the title off him, because I think ultimately the story people are going to want is some kind of switch in his relationship with Adam Cole leading to a rematch down the line where they face each other for the title, and instead of it being friendly, it's deeply personal when, you know, depending who turns on who. I'm guessing it's going to be Adam Cole that eventually does the turn. And it kind of fits into MJF's narrative of, you know, having the short end of the stick when it comes to friends growing up. But, you know, as far as Joe, I was watching that match tonight. And it just, you know what I mean? It was fine. But at this stage of his career, it was just not all that exciting, you know. I mean, he just beat on him for almost the whole match, and it it did pick up towards the end when Pentagon tried to make his comeback, but it just, you know, like it seems like they were hitting the nail on the head. Like once you go over 10 minutes with him, it's good for him at this stage of his career, and I think it's something where if he had the world title, people would expect, you know, because what AEW delivers typically is 20, 30, 40 minute main events, and that would be a big adjustment for them to, you know what I mean? I just don't think at this stage of his career he can have those types of matches with just with his condition, you know? It's just, it's hard. Like, he is beat red during his matches, and he's a big guy, so it's tough for him to sustain, you know what I mean, that type of spot. I think it's just not something that, I mean, if they did do it, I think it'd be something that would be short term, if at the most. I mean, I'm not saying he wouldn't be credible, but
I don't think Joe's formula for match has to follow other champions' formulas either. I mean, I'm not advocating for it. I'm just saying. So if Joe wrestles 12-minute, you know, a 12-minute world title match, or you know, pushes things to 18, but kind of paces it a little differently. I mean, that's fine. I mean, I don't think every champion has to wrestle the same formula, the same length. If it's a way to kind of shake things up, and you know, if you have the right opponent, and Joe is motivated to get in the best shape he's capable of at 44 years old, you know, I mean, I'm not making a pitch for it. I'm not predicting it, but I'm also not saying that I think you can look at what Joe is doing in the ring and disqualify it as a possibility worth considering if you felt ultimately not it was best for Joe, but ultimately you felt it was best for MJF to face some adversity or move off to the side and be a tag team with Adam Cole. Because they could do, you know, Cole and MJF against FTR in a pay-per-view setting, or Cole and MJF against a couple heels. So, again, I think the odds are slim. I'm not advocating for it, but I'm just saying I don't think because Joe can't go, you know, 28 minutes all out like he once could, that should be a reason people should just go, well, for sure it won't happen. I guess that's my point.
Yeah, I mean, it could happen. I mean, I didn't mean to totally discount it. It's just I think, you know, my reasons for it not happening at this time, I think, are just MJF is really strong, and I think him carrying the title around does carry some stock. So I think to me, the timing of it, I mean, they could work it, but I'd like to see him see this title run out, you know, a little bit more, flushing out with Adam Cole from what I want to see personally. But I definitely could, I mean, they could go another way and it could work, and they could, you know, do what you said and do the tag matches, and it certainly, you know, Joe could do that. I'd just like to see him, you know, find a little bit better formula. You know, I like what he does, but I think it just, you know, just something about his matches, they, even when they're short, they drag a little bit sometimes. And I think if he can find a way to fill in the small gaps a little bit and make them a little more exciting, I think that would go a long way to, you know, making that possibility a little more palatable for me, at least.
Yeah, makes sense. All right, well, let's go to Mark in Westchester, New York, first caller up. Mark, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Collision tonight?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Happy Saturday.
Thank you.
So it's funny the way you started, because my first thought when I called in was, how weird is it that in 2023, the two best character actors on a wrestling company are Christian and Roderick Strong? And potentially, at least in my mind, the most over move in wrestling is the Samoa Joe moving out of the way.
Yes, that or the kangaroo kick and double clothesline, but yeah.
Yeah.
I love Joe moving out of the way. My problem with Joe, Mark, my problem with Joe moving out of the way is, why doesn't everybody do it? Like, you're making everyone seem a bit like a fool for not just always moving out of the way. That's my only issue with it, but I love it because it makes so much sense.
Well, that's why he's the king of television, Wade.
Yes. High IQ fighter. As opposed to Moxley in the first match, who had to step into Action Andretti, who kept just misfiring left and right in that match. He's athletic, but he can't hit the spot he's supposed to hit. His dropkick came up short. His couple other moves came up short. He did the flip dive, and Moxley's like, oh, my God, he's not even going to touch me. Moxley had to, like, stagger to the right and get into the zone. And then in the ring, Andretti landed on his legs instead of his body. It's tough when you have a wrestler who's literally moving into position to get hit because the other guy can't hit the target accurately. Moxley should have just stepped to the side and shoved him to the mat, I would argue. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Mark.
No. Well, that's a great transition because my second point was about Moxley. If I did not listen to podcasts or read the internet, and John Moxley just showed up on Collision for the first time, I would think that this was just because he's now the international champion. Now he's got to defend on every show. So I found that, like, interesting that, like, wasn't like, oh, John Moxley's here. It's a big thing because it's his first time. It's like, okay, he's here now. So that's the first point. And then the second thing is, based on, you know, CM Punk being gone and just everything going on in wrestling, if you guys had to pick one person to be your ace on a wrestling show, would it be Moxley, Seth Rollins, or Roman Reigns at this moment in time?
Ah, interesting. Now, is Roman only available occasionally with long hiatuses? Is that part of the package?
At this moment in time. So let's go with that.
Yeah. I would take Moxley right now. I think there's a more organic connection that he has with fans and a transparent love of what he's doing with an authenticity, because he's not really a character. You know, there's just an authenticity to how he presents himself. That is not a dig at Seth, and, you know, Reigns is amazing, and it's a close call because Reigns is such a big star. I mean, Roman Reigns would make the biggest difference to just show up in AEW right now, for instance. If you say, like, in the real-world scenario, would you trade Reigns for Moxley? I mean, I probably would, just because Moxley's been around and fought a lot of people. I don't think the way that they framed his character has been in sync with how the fans want to react to him. You bring Reigns in, that's a needle mover. That's a difference maker. That shakes the foundation of the industry. If Seth showed up, you would get some of that too. But obviously, you know, oh my God, Seth's in AEW. So, you know, the jump aspect of it gives Seth and Reigns an edge over Moxley just being in the same spot he's in. But if you just strip all that away and just go, who do you want cutting? I mean, Moxley's promo last week was so much better than anything Seth has done this year. And I've liked some of Seth's promos. But, you know, a lot of it is ha-ha and the singing and being all over the top in kind of a cornball way. And Reigns is so dependent on Paul Heyman and the interaction with the Usos and Solo. So, yeah, I mean, I would probably go with Mox, but it is a close call, and I don't think I would roll my eyes at anybody choosing the other two. Sean Radican, what do you think?
Just based on current circumstances, I'd go with Moxley just because he's available all the time, and like you said, he just cuts amazing promos. He can put on good matches with just about anybody, and there's an authenticity there. Overall, I mean, Roman Reigns would make the biggest difference to AEW. He's, you know, by far the biggest star in wrestling. But if I'm going to have someone week in and week out, it's going to be Moxley. And I guess when the show started, Moxley came out, it seems like when Tony goes on bad times, you know, Moxley's the one that comes out first through the curtain.
Yep.
You know, after All Out last year, it was, Moxley, I think it was the first one out after Tony's brief statement, or one of, you know, it's just one of the first people to.
When Punk got hurt, when Punk got hurt, who was the interim champ? You know, I mean,
yeah.
Moxley is to Tony Khan as Shawn Michaels was to Vince McMahon in the late 90s, where it's like, you know, Sean would joke, oh yeah, when somebody got hurt and I had time off, Vince would call me up and beg me to come back and save the day and fill in. And I think Moxley wants to be a top guy. I think he's relishing, you know, the absence, the void left by Punk. And, you know, Danielson and Moxley now showing up on Collision, you know, certainly filled in for the absence of Punk. You know, it's a good way to patch that hole. But it does mean he's got to spread, you know, some of his other wrestlers out a little bit more, where Dynamite is less loaded, because I don't think Danielson and Moxley want to be on Dynamite and Collision every single week. So he's going to have to be kind of strategic in how he features them.
Did
Mark,
he ever get
you.
That
you
vacation?
Follow up on that or bring up something else? Oh, God. I don't know. Good point.
I don't think he did.
Yeah. Anyway, Mark, go ahead. What else have you got for us?
No, that was my thought exactly. I feel like 5, 10, 15 years down the line, when you look back on this time, the last couple of years. You know, what Moxley has contributed to AEW, I think, is going to be more recognized now than it is recognized then than it is now. But, like, his ability to just step up and connect with the crowd. Like, I think, like, Seth Rollins, without his music, does he really connect with the crowd? And does Roman Reigns right now really want to have that much responsibility, or does he just want that time where he can show up whenever he wants? That's why my thought was Moxley. So I kind of agree with you guys both. But, that's pretty much all I had. My only last thought was, I guess it's cool that Angelico still has a job. I don't think I've seen him since, like, 2020. So it was, I guess it's cool to see him. And that's it. Thanks for taking my call, and you guys have a good night.
Thanks, Mark. Good to hear from you again. Appreciate the question. Sean, we brought up CM Punk there. I want to read a question from Julian from London, who wants to know, does it matter that CM Punk never lost the world title? Twice as AEW champion and once as real world champion, Punk has left without losing or passing the torch. Tony seems concerned about his title lineage, hence the ill-judged interim titles that he introduced. Do you think it bothers Tony Khan to have those asterisks in the AEW title history? Does it matter that Punk beat lots of AEW talent without them getting their wins back? Sean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the downside is that, you know, he never was able to put anyone over. He did get people over working like MJF. Really gained a lot working with him, I thought. But he never really got a chance to put anyone over in a meaningful way. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure that hurts. I don't think it's so much a big deal as, you know, have it. I mean, they kind of threw the – they kind of brought it back now, showing the records again. They've kind of gotten away from the records and the rankings. They're still not doing the rankings. But I think they're just – I think Tony's just glad for that to be over. And, you know, hopefully just move on to the focus being on his product and how successful it is that from a live, you know, when he has big moments and puts on good shows, that, you know, having the attention on that instead of stage stuff, you know, overshadowing all the hard work the roster's doing. I think, you know, that's what means more in the long term is just, having people recognize the company for the good work it's doing and not for the behind the scenes, you know, all the behind the scenes stuff that just keeps coming up. But, you know, when they brought him back, I was surprised, not surprised, but I figured it would happen again. And it happened a lot sooner than, you know what I mean? I thought maybe, you know, they would with, you know, getting your own show might help you do, you know, help Punk, manage things, but manage his expectations, or not manage, or, you know, manage being around people who they thought he could be around, but that didn't work out. So I'm sure that, you know, all the interim stuff and then Punk coming back again and you know, that getting dropped, I'm sure that irritates Tony, but I think that's something you can move on pretty easily from compared to all the, you know, the real damage that was done with the various conflicts he had. And I'm not, you know, I don't want to put all the blame. I'm not good. I just want to clarify. I don't totally blame, you know, him either. You know what I mean? I think there's blame to go around, but you know, how he acted was it unprofessional and wrong? Yes. But, you know, there's other people in the company that should take some of the blame too. And, you know, I think ultimately now it's, you know, hopefully they can find a way to go forward without this, you know, drama happening, you know, again. And it's just tough to digest sometimes, you know. And but I think I'm just hoping Tony can step up and lead that ship and set people, you know, do something in the near future.
Sean,
where
I'm
just
having trouble hearing you, and I do think it might be a Wi-Fi issue with me. Hold on one second here, and
sure.
Let me try to adjust something. Everyone, hold tight. All right. Let's let's see here. We've got another caller. Let's go there and see if that if the little tweak I did helps the connection here. We'll go to caller from Cleveland giving us a call. Darren is calling us, in fact, from attending Collision tonight. Darren, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Wade, good evening. Happy to join you guys.
Yeah, great to talk to you. I thought tonight, I'll throw a couple questions your way, and then you can tell us about your experience too and what stood out to you. But I saw attendance through WrestleTix earlier. It was, you know, under 4,000 tickets sold, or just tickets distributed. It was like 3,300 or something like that, down from over 4,000 last time. The camera angles that they chose for tonight's show, I actually thought were really good. I don't think you had a chance to see them unless they showed them on the big screen. But they they made the arena look as full as, you know, 3,000 and change can. And so I was impressed by that. They had a crane shot of a camera. There was a strategic angle. But I've also seen photos online, including from you, showing a lot of empty seats. Tell me about the atmosphere. And if you've attended other AW Cleveland events, how did the attendance ultimately compare at Showtime?
So this is my first ever AEW event at all. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
I was there just because of my son, my youngest son, my 12-year-old son, Dylan, the big AEW fan. And that's why we went. And we were sitting on the hard – so we're sitting opposite hard camera. So we're able to see some of those camera shots on the big screen. And I agree with you. They did a great job of camouflaging the empty seats at the different video spots. It did a real nice job. I would say, you know, 30% of the arena was probably filled, and I would say that number is right. You know, between 35 and 4,000 people were there. The whole third level was with curtains, and the second level probably 20% capacity, and you had the floor seats. So that's how it was set up. But the pictures I sent to you earlier this evening was around 725. And it didn't change that much, you know, right before bell time at 8 p.m.
Did it seem to take away from your experience that 2/3 of the seats were empty, or did the crowd, the way it was located and clustered, and maybe fan enthusiasm make up for that?
I agree. I think the crowd, you know, the AEW fan base is very passionate. And they did a nice job rooting everyone on. And I think, you know, one thing compared to WWE shows that I've been to, a SmackDown and Raw at Rocket, the AEW show is more fast-paced, too. It didn't seem like we were dragging, you know, during you know, commercials or breaks. So that's the one takeaway that I liked about it. It went fast for those 2 hours, even though they did have a couple of matches at 7:30, a couple ROH matches, and then they're going to have some more ROH tapings after Collision went off the air. That's when we left.
Who got the best reactions on the show tonight? Like, who seemed like the biggest stars? And you hadn't been to an AEW show before, so kind of talk about that compared to other live event experiences and how the crowd might have seemed to react differently to wrestlers than WWE wrestlers or other wrestlers in the past.
I would say the top three pops, two of them were former WWE guys. Number one pop of the night was Jon Moxley, without a doubt. He was way over, you know, coming through the crowd, playing, you know, the Wild Thing song. That stood out the most. And then Darby Allin. I think he got the second biggest pop from the crowd, especially after he got attacked backstage by Christian and Luchasaurus. Excuse me for that. I'm still getting used to AEW, so my son had to give me a crash course tonight. So after
he
came out,
that's really interesting. Yeah.
So after he came out of that beatdown, you know, coming out of the match against Roderick Strong, he got a nice pop during that. So that was the third. And Daniel Bryan. got a nice pop, but wasn't to the extent of his prime days in WWE when he was doing the Yes Movement in 2013 and 2014. Did not reach that epic climax, but it was okay. But then Samoa Joe got a great pop for being a heel, that tweener guy. People coming out chanting Joe, Joe's going to kill you. It was great. Samoa Joe still puts on a great, great show for his age and what he's been through.
Sean, do you have a question for Darren?
I just wondered how did people react to, did they show Roderick Strong's pre-tape promo to the crowd? I just thought that was really funny. I'm trying to find the line, but he did say something about how he could win the title and it wouldn't mean as much as having Adam's friendship. Did you get to check that out live?
Yeah, we did. We did get to see that. It really wasn't a big reaction from the crowd. It probably could come off better on TV. So, I did tape it tonight, so I'm interested to see how that came over on TNT. But, at the arena there, it really didn't seem it was a big reaction from that.
What about Jade Cargill coming back to save Statlander? How did that come across? Because she had a big run and then disappeared since she lost to Statlander for the women's championship. How did that come across? Were people excited to see that match?
Oh yeah, when she came out for the save, the people were excited. And then I'm thinking, what's going to come next? The turn. And that really turned off the crowd. So, but initially she got a real nice pop, and she carries herself very well. Very big presence for her.
That's about the only other.
Darren, talk about. Darren, talk. Go ahead, Sean.
I just had one last question about how did the main event come across to you? To me, watching at home, it seemed to drag. Like it just seemed like Joe dominated the whole time, and it Penta El Cerro Miedo, put up much of a challenge. Did it come? I mean, I watched they went to a pretty decent, couple minute break where Joe just kept dominating on the outside, and then he did a long, double arm submission, it reminded me very much of a WWE house show, that house show type of spot where the heel just holds the submission for an eternity. How did that match come? Did that come across like a way to get people excited to see what's next? Or did it pick up enough towards the end where people were kind of, excited to see what's coming? Cause I just was wondering the initial stages of the match just seemed very one-sided, and it just kind of dragged for me. I was just wondering how it came across in person.
Yeah, I thought it carried on longer the match went. It got even, and you had the better spots. I think it kind of dragged at the end only because of that table being in place. It was there for like 6 or 7 minutes without any action. You had that awesome bump at the end, and Joe comes in for the submission because I think they were really against the clock on that. So I think they kind of rushed it. It might have been, too late.
Yeah.
It might have been delayed on that. So
I was wondering if maybe they just got Pentagon's offense had to get cut out to get off at the air and fight right at 10.
Yeah, they were cutting it really, really close because I kept looking at the time. All right, 10:59, 9:59 here. Something's got to give.
On commentary, they said that Tony Khan had authorized them to stay with the match as long as needed. And I need to listen back, but it sounded like Kevin Kelly then said, so it is TV time remaining. And I'm like, no, that's actually the opposite of what Nigel just said, Tony Khan communicated. I have to listen to it back. But they were definitely, drawing attention to the fact that they were running out of time. But they would stick with the match, and then it ended, just a minute or so into the movie time slot. And I know, I've heard Tony Khan is gets upset and uptight and expresses angst when the show isn't timed out well. I don't think there was any reason that match needed to go over if they didn't want it to. you know, given the content of the match, that seems odd that they wouldn't be polished enough to, you know, give time cues and make sure that they're getting to the finishing sequence without having to run over and upset TNT. But for all I know, that they wanted to run over a couple minutes, then that was part of the plan. But it seemed like they were scrambling a little bit on commentary.
Yeah, you figure by this time...
Darren, I want
to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Darren. Go ahead, yeah.
No, you figure being 5 years into the business now, they should have the timing and the segment down pat, where they wouldn't have to be in that type of jeopardy of going over that a minute or two past the top of the hour.
Yeah. I mean, again, unless it's a strategy. I mean, Raw's done it, and Nitro did it, and, you know, but it makes it seem more realistic, you know, that it matches don't just end conveniently right at the top of the hour, but I don't know that in 2023 people are too hung up on that, that aspect of things. Darren, I'm fascinated that this is your first AEW show. Tell me a little bit about, as a wrestling fan, why it took your 12-year-old son to get you into AEW, and what you, since you're not super caught up, what you thought of this experience. I think that's it's fascinating talking to you as a longtime fan with kind of that framework in terms of your orientation to AEW.
You know, like I said, I took him because he wanted to do it, and it turned out I had more fun than I originally planned I was going to. Probably because some of the guys who I knew from the WWE days, like, you know, Jon Moxley, Samoa Joe, Christian, you know, Bryan Danielson, that probably helped out a little bit. But you know, Darby Allin could be a guy that I could follow. He took some awesome bumps tonight, and also Roderick Strong too. So those are a couple things that you know, brought my attention. But there are some things that caught on that I think they're going in the wrong direction. You know, some things that WWE made mistakes on years ago, and WCW, you know, they have a lot of titles in play now. You know, they're doing more pay-per-views too, and they're failing to you know, develop younger talent. You know, I love, you know, Roderick Strong. I'm glad to see a hometown Cleveland guy, Eddie Kingston, from the AIW days, right, to see at independent shows getting a strong push. So I think there's some you know, pluses, but I'd have to you know watch the product more and see what it offers to me. So I'm willing to give it a chance. You know, since my son's into it, he's got the video game. But I think it's just all these years being a WWE fan, especially the last year, how WWE has really have been at upward scale with every, you know, check of the box since Triple H has, you know, taken over. But I'm willing to give them a chance. I think, you know, we're better off overall if both companies are successful, you know. You know, one thing that was interesting tonight at the beginning of the show, like 7:55, Tony Khan comes out on stage to the Major League theme from Randy Newman, the city song from Major League, Randy Newman. It's the City by the Lake, which was pretty cool. And Tony was just, well, you know, was glad to be in Cleveland. Hope you guys enjoy what we have, and you know, it's gonna be a good night of wrestling. So I thought that was pretty cool. I never remember Vince doing that back in the day.
What, any suggestions in terms of the live fan experience that you'd add to your comments there for AEW? I mean, some things are out of their control. Obviously, you'd love to have a completely full building, and if you only had one show a week instead of two, everybody would be there every time. You'd see Kenny and the Bucks and on and on. But, yeah, just kind of elaborate a little bit more on anything that might be key to getting you to be more into the AEW product and might, just in a generic sense, serve his audience better. Because you have such a fresh set of eyes when it comes to that.
Yeah, I think two things. I think they need to put these shows in a smaller arena. If they were to move it to the Wolfstein Center, a 10,000-seat house, they'd probably get a better experience, especially on TV. I think the crowd would be louder, or even maybe a 6,000-seat arena like in Akron at the Jar. And also, I think another thing that you had brought up earlier is that they need to put more talent out there instead of putting them on the shelf. For all these months, like Adam Cole, Hangman Page, those are the guys they need to get out there. And they need to, you know, feature the women more. You know, I'm a big Britt Baker fan from her days in AIW, independent scene. So I think those are a couple things that they could probably improve on and eliminate the show. I think if they stick to, you know, the Dynamite show and Collision, I think, you know, that'd be sufficient enough. But it's going to be a tough sell right now over the next, you know, 4 months with college football. When you have a primetime game on all the major networks plus all the cable networks, that's going to be a tough draw to get people to watch.
Oh, I know. Yes, totally. Anything else you want to share from your experience here?
No, I think that is it. You know, the fans are very passionate. They love their AEW. Not too many merchandise stands there. After we left, we were able to walk right up to a stand, and I was able to buy my son a shirt in and out. It wasn't like a half-hour wait if you were there with WWE. So that was kind of nice. And they didn't announce any type of return to the area at all. So.
Yeah. You didn't stick around for ROH, or are you going back to see? I can't recall if you said you completely left the building or not.
Yeah, we left right when the show ended at top of the hour after the match. One thing I'd like to add, when he was Big Cass, Wade, he still isn't over. You know, pretty sad. A guy like that still has a lot of work to do.
Did Tony Khan do anything to try to talk everyone to tell everyone or inspire everyone to stay in their seats for ROH?
Not really. It was really the hostess. I forget the young lady's name who was the ring announcer. She had really plugged the ROH, you know, the day after Collision goes off the air with a couple ROH title matches. But she was the one really pushing that. So Tony only came out for that really 2 minute. Welcome the Cleveland fans.
Yeah. Sean, one last chance if you got anything to ask Darren before we let him go.
Yeah, I was just he brought up the attendance and the merchandise, and I think that's two big problems for them. I see so many reports about how bad the merch has been, you know what I mean? Obviously, Adam Cole and MJF have had some good stuff, but I mean, week after week, I see these pictures, and no one's going, like to me, isn't that just strange, given, you know what I mean, like how popular the company's become since its inception, that, you know what I mean, like they're just not putting the shirts at these live events, and, you know, it seems like now that we're in the college football season, I noticed, like, the Acclaim skit was almost like I don't know if you saw that live, but I'm pretty sure they must have showed that to you guys as well. But the Acclaim skit was, that was almost like a, you know, get your tickets, folks skit. They showed every city they're heading to in the coming week. I just thought, was there anything from your perspective, like, were you surprised about, I mean, you talked a little bit about the merchandise, but were you, surprised that they, what they had to offer? And just any insight?
It was very limited what they had to offer. You know, probably like six or seven different types of shirts. And at the end of the day, I bought my son the generic black AEW logo shirt, which was which is pretty cool looking. But it was pretty limited what they had there.
It's how old's your son?
12.
You said, yeah, when 12. I was about, when I was about his age, I had to choose between, Warrior and Taker, you know what I mean, and Legion of Doom at the house shows. And, I couldn't decide which one. And, I know that logo shirt is cool, but, like, my last choice would have been a WWF logo shirt.
And I think now, WWE's got the great, merchandising machine, and they just, both my sons order the stuff all online. You know, my youngest son, when I took that, he's a big fan of the Bloodline. You know, he's got a few of those shirts, the different types.
And their WWE's live events are mobbed, too. Like, they, I saw a shot. They were charging $45 for the yeah shirts. Just says yeah on the front. I haven't been to a WWE event in a couple of years to see that they were charging $45 for a T-shirt. Just blew me away.
Yeah, the one thing that was nice that I didn't see tonight, I didn't see grown men with championship belts around them, on their waist or shoulders. That was kind of nice. I didn't see that tonight at AEW.
Everyone's going to be getting those NFL title belts now.
Except for Jacksonville.
Yeah. Somehow those magically sold out.
Yeah.
There's a order of 1,000 headed to, what's the address there? T.I. What's the name of this stadium? Big order heading to the Jacksonville Stadium.
Yeah, that was something. That was something. That was quite the moment. Darren, thank you so much for calling. It was great hearing from you and getting your perspective. Your son, I assume, wants to go back again.
Yes, and I told him I'd take him again. So I'm sure they'll be back. So,
right. But
hey, thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk with you guys tonight. It was a real pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a real pleasure from us too. Thank you for sharing your on-site experience there. All right, very good. Let's shift to an email here, Sean, from Azan at St. Louis. He says, hey, Sean and Wade. He says, first, Sean, you have been doing amazing work at the Torch, and you deserve more honor for your work. What do you think about that, Sean?
I like it. I'm willing to accept any honors that will be bestowed upon me, I guess. I appreciate the kind words.
Very good. All right. Yes. Accept the compliment. It is well earned.
Yeah.
So he says, what do you think Keith Lee and the Righteous are planning for Collision in the future? What did you think? First of all, if you're going to do a vignette on the Righteous, they're not exactly a super well-known act in AEW. They have to put their names on the screen. The announcers have to say who they are. The wrestlers have to say who they are. I bet a lot of people watched that and were like, who are these people? Because there's so many people on the AEW roster, and some of them, you know, if they appear on Rampage, people aren't watching Collision aren't going to know, and vice versa.
I thought the same exact vignette they heard. I saw it before on either the pay-per-view or one of the TV shows. I swear it was the same exact promo.
Yeah.
Which was weird.
There's a little bit of sloppiness in terms of that. You know, that's a
separate
show. The question, though, is what do you think they're planning? We heard from Keith Lee taking a little dig at Swerve, saying he was, you know, saying a certain someone doesn't want to face him in singles matches, but he does want to be a singles wrestler after having achieved some success in tag team wrestling. Talk about Keith Lee in particular, Sean, and what you think they might have going for him.
I don't know. I mean, what has he had, one match since Collision started, and that was it, and until tonight when he had the promo? It seems like they're not too interested in pushing him, and then they realize that, hey, maybe we should push this guy, and then he gets, you know what I mean? He's just kind of start and stop lately. Hopefully this is a signal that, hey, you know, we're going to feature this guy on TV, and you know, he says he's going to be a singles act, and I think it'd be good to see him on TV. I mean, it'd be good to see what he can do every week. He's been one of the more, like, when I just, you know, it's just kind of, like, frustrating watching him because he had so much potential, you know, when he came up through the indies and got signed after, you know, kind of getting disgruntled in Ring of Honor and going to Evolve, and then he got signed with WWE, and he, you know, kind of got off to a good start there, and then, you know, that stopped, and then he eventually ended up getting released and signing with AEW, and he just kind of, you know, hasn't, outside of his work with Swerve, it's been very start and stop. And so I'm hoping, I don't know, they kind of teased some stuff with him in ROH, and they dropped that too, you know, I think towards the end of last year maybe. They teased some stuff with, you know, and they didn't follow through. So, you know, hopefully you know, he gets a shot, you know, to really show what he could do. I thought did he have his hair dyed back, you know, black tonight? I think he did.
Wasn't he just wearing a hood? We couldn't really see.
Oh, yeah,
I think
it's hard to tell, but maybe his beard looked better. But I think he looks way older than he is when he, you know what I mean? When he just lets his gray grow out, I don't think that's the best look for TV for him. But, man, he's just such a, he's got a presence about him, and he's well-spoken and, you know, on promos and could really have put on entertaining matches in the ring. And I just feel like just none of it's come together for him since he's, you know what I mean? It's like ever since he left the Indies, it's just, you know, kind of never come together for him for whatever reason.
Well, you know, I mean, some of it's on him because he's not who he once was. You know, he's not in the shape. He's older. He's beat up. Yeah. His cardio's bad. His conditioning just doesn't seem to be what it needs to be in order to keep up in singles matches. And you know, you're a professional athlete, and that's part of the problem.
And I know he had I believe he had a long bout with COVID too, which probably, you know, just didn't help anything.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think. I know.
There's a reason he's not still in WWE getting a big push, you know, and that predated,
right.
You know, some of the issues that he's had are, you know, COVID certainly is not a positive for him.
No.
But yeah, it's not all, gee, what happened? Some of it has to do with him. And it's a shame because, man, a motivated.
Yeah, I'm kind of just like.
I'm not saying he's got a.
I was just thinking more along. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I know the why. I'm like, why didn't he maintain at least the shape he was in on the Indies? I know injuries and COVID, but there's a time when you can. He just hasn't, you know, done enough for himself to put himself in a position physically to succeed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, boy, it'd be a nice. For Tony Khan, if Keith Lee could step up, just be utilized with who he is in some form or fashion, better than he has been, you know. And I just, you want all hands on deck when you lose Punk and when, you know, attendance is down compared to previous visits for the same cities. Ratings are in a tough spot. They're entering a tough stretch here up against college football. You want to take advantage of everybody you have, and you want everybody to be their best. And so hopefully we start to see signs of that. You know, it seems like Moxley, as the announcer said, three matches in a 7-day period. Seems like he's willing to step up. I want to ask you, let's finish the email first. The Righteous, what do you think of The Righteous, Sean?
I like what we've seen, but they haven't told, like you said, they haven't told the viewers enough about them. They were a fun act in the old Ring of Honor with the horror story elements, but they've really just kind of let them hang on the periphery, whether it be in, you know, AEW Dark and now ROH, and now they're back on AEW. And Vinny Marcellia is a local guy to me. He totally transformed how he was more of a, you know, in the lines of Matt Taven with the, you know, the good-looking wrestler, you know what I mean, that type of wrestler, the local that could go in the ring, and he kind of, now he's got the dreads and everything, and he's got all the tattoos and the cult leader type of vibe. And he's got a Dutch and, you know, he had Dutch with him from Ring of Honor, and they've added to the act as well. And I think it's got some, you know, some real, with player Dose from Super Smash Brothers. I think it's got some real potential, but you just you can't act like people, you know what I mean? You can't act like people know who they are and what they do based on the small amount of exposure ROH had going, especially during their, you know, that last era when they were stuck in, you know, the COVID tapings well beyond all the other companies. And they better explain it better, because it's just too little information is being given. It's just these, you know what I mean? Like the viewer needs more than just like, you know, them talking and Dutch flashing his tongue on the camera and Dose making weird faces. They just, you know, I mean, they should really let Vincent talk, let him do the talking, because he's got that, you know, that cult leader down, and let him do the talking and you know, set the mission statement for the group, and I think that would be better than it's just strange to me, you know, that just to keep airing that abstract vignette over and over when it just doesn't do anything other than, you know, it almost says like, hey, we're just going to throw these guys out there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, number two from Azan. He goes, what do you think about the Lucha Brothers doing their own singles act instead of being a team? They work great as a team and as individuals. Sean, yeah, specifically what Azan says, and broaden it out to how you feel that Tony has done in terms of booking Rey Fénix and Penta during the course of AEW.
Oh, boy, as a tag team, it's been great. You know, they've gotten to really showcase what they can do. They had some really incredible matches. I thought one of the best matches in the history of the company against the Young Bucks at All Out a couple of years ago. I really love that match. As singles acts, it's just been a hard – it just seems like it's been a hard transition. It seems like they go from, you know, top of the card to the mid – you know what I mean? They just don't come across as threats when they're in singles matches. They lose, you know, they lose a lot of the time, or they're used to put others over, and they're not protected. So it's puzzling to me. At least, I mean, out of the two of them, I've seen Rey Fénix singles matches. He's had some incredible things. You know what I mean? Just like would blow people away if they put him on TV and let him go against their top guys, because he feuded with Kenny Omega in the Indies a long time ago and had, you know, they had some insane matches together. And when he was in PWG, he was, you know, out of the two of them, he was the great singles guy. So I'm surprised he hasn't got, you know what I mean, just out of the two of them, I'm surprised Rey Fénix hasn't gotten a chance to do more, because he's just, you know what I mean? Like when the, like when you see him and they let him go and he's doing, he is just really, really good. It just seems like they've both been held back from their full potential as singles acts. I feel they should both be presented. I think they should both be established as, you know, it means something when you beat them, because it just seems like they lose a lot. And I don't think it should be that way with them. I think they should have been pushed a little better before they started using them to move people up, because it feels like it doesn't mean anything when they lose, and that's a shame, because Fénix has the talent to be a top guy, and Pentagon has this crazy charisma, and he just doesn't really get to show it off anymore. You know what I mean? So I feel like Tony just reins them in as singles and only really lets them hit their potential when they're in the tag division. It's kind of puzzling to me, because they really need fresh singles acts, and why not use, you know, at least Rey Fénix? Why not just make Rey Fénix a priority? So, you know, I mean, Tony had to have seen him on the Indies, knowing what he watches, you know. So I think he saw a lot of what I saw.
Let me shift topics to a couple other segments on the show. Eddie Kingston and Claudio had the sit down. They're, you know, bitter enemies. Shivani sitting between them. Personal issues going way back. Eddie Kingston sort of alludes to the idea he's mad at Claudio because Claudio, I guess, didn't do jobs on his way out before he left the indie scene to go on to bigger and better things. He referred to the land of make believe where Claudio landed. Kingston brought up that Claudio lived with him and met his parents, and he knows what he went through as a kid. And Claudio's like, well, did you become what your parents wanted you to? Which felt like kind of personal and you know, not the nicest thing to say.
Right.
What did you think about – and then they brought it around to a handshake. Talk about the history with Claudio and Eddie and talk about how you think they're communicating that to a 2023 national cable audience and if you think they're doing a good job drawing the lines between the two of them.
I mean, just the part about Claudio not doing jobs on
John,
the way out. Kind of, yeah. Oh, can you hear me?
There you are. Yep, go ahead.
The part about Claudio not doing jobs was really strange to me. Just, you know what I mean? Just doesn't – it's not something I'd put on TV as a reason to set up a fake match. You know what I mean? A real circumstance to – or that type of real circumstance to – you know, it's just not something I'd say to my audience, like, and expect them to respond to it as a, you know what I mean, as a build to a world title match. I thought they should have, I mean, if anything, they could have created any number of reasons why Eddie was mad at him for the purposes of, you know what I mean, for the purposes of the match and made it interesting because Claudio took some really personal digs and then, but Kingston's comebacks didn't seem to hold much ground because they just seemed not to make sense in the context of, you know what
John,
I mean,
context
of purpose. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
If we're any better off. So bear with us here. All right, Sean, I moved off a hotspot that I was trying on to just Wi-Fi again. We'll see if the storms have passed and that helps. Can you hear me just fine?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Sean, can you hear me just fine?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. Go ahead and answer that. Just start over with the Eddie Claudio analysis because the connection just wasn't strong enough for me to pick up enough on it.
Okay. Basically what I was saying is when I thought Claudio's part was fine, you know, taking those digs with the family and so forth. But when Kingston spoke, it just didn't resonate with me because he talked about him doing, you know, the reason he was mad at him for so long is because he didn't do business on the way out, which, you know, came across like he didn't, you know, drop matches to me before he went to WWE, which in the context of the story they're telling doesn't make a lot of sense because then isn't, you know what I mean? Because what isn't what then what they're doing fake as well? I mean, it's just I thought they could have grounded Kingston, you know, even if they made something up about why he was upset with, you know what I mean, from Claudio on the indie days. I think mm-hmm. that's would have been a much better way to go.
Yeah, yeah. Sean, unfortunately, because of our connection, I'm kind of bummed out because I can't necessarily respond thoroughly to what you're saying some of the time. So we just kind of have to live with that. I am going to shift to Bryant in Boston, who just gave us who is on hold, I should say. And then after that, we've got another Insight correspondent, Tony, to join us. Bryant, welcome. We have a second Insight correspondent on hold, so I don't want to go too long with you because we're already running sort of long with the show with everything planned. But I wanted to get you on here and not make you wait any longer. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Collision tonight?
I really just have one point to make, and that'll be it. I Wade, you and I talked about this a while back, like how Tony Khan, who he listens to on Collision, is different than who he listens to on Dynamite. You could see that tonight. The because I think Bryan Danielson is the main showrunner for Collision because, you know, you had a meaningless women's match on Wednesday that didn't amount to anything, but on this one you had a sort of open challenge with Chris Statlander, but you built a story with a credible challenger, Jade Cargill. So I mean, Cargill's, you know, it's nice to see her back, so you get a storyline there. There was a lot of good storyline building stuff there, and I just think whoever is running Collision should be running Dynamite. So I'm just wondering your guys' thoughts on the women's segment. And I'm good for tonight. Thanks for taking a call.
Cool. Great. Thanks, Brian. Yeah, Sean, we touched on Jade earlier with Darren. But I want to get your thoughts. Hopefully our connection is better. It's just kind of been intermittently good and bad. But what do you think about the way they handled Jade Cargill's return and the tease of helping Chris Statlander up and then taking her down quickly again?
Yeah, I thought it was really well done. She came across like a star when she came out to save her. She got a big pop, but for heel, so they had her do the churn on Statlander. And I thought that came across as, you know, really, it felt like a really nicely planned out return to set up a big match that people want to see. So I like that a lot. I think it was a good piece of business.
I think Jade coming back, I wonder if she would be back if it weren't for firing Punk. You know, I don't know what the timeline was for her expected return, but you know, having her show up again adds some star power to Collision. Talk about that. And then Brian also just kind of brought up, you know, the booking difference between Collision and Dynamite. You can talk about that with the women and in a broader sense too.
Yeah. You know, she was kind of used heavily on Rampage. I'm pretty sure she was used a lot on Rampage when she was the TBS Women's Champion. And it makes sense for her to be used here as well, moving her over here and feuding with Statlander. And you know, the show needs more star power. And, it, you know, very well could have been bringing her back to, you know, boost the star power on the show that Punk gone, because they definitely need another star. As far as the way the shows are booked, I mean, I know it's Tony Khan doing the booking, and I know there's different teams for each show, and I prefer the way he books Collision to the way he books Dynamite. Mm-hmm. It just seems like everything flows so nicely. There's a mix of old school elements that I love, that I recognize from growing up, like the picture-in-picture promos. As, you know, people come to the ring, I feel like I'm watching my childhood wrestling. You know what I mean? It's just it's a comfortable watch on Saturday nights. It feels like when Wednesday night comes, it feels like I've drank 6 Red Bulls and I got to get ready for what's coming at me. You know, I just feel like the show, once yeah. it starts, it's like, you know, when you're younger, when I was younger and I go to the gym, I take pre-workout. So it feels like I need to take pre-workout to get ready for Dynamite every week and, you know, or drink some Red Bulls and get all pumped up, because it just, Excalibur just never stops talking about upcoming matches, and he's, you know, just going in 99 miles an hour breathlessly, you know, without taking a breath. And, I'm just watching the show tonight, and like graphics are casually popping up, telling me what's coming next, telling me they're promoting so much stuff. I mean, it's just insane how many, you know, balls Tony has to juggle, so to speak, with, you know, all these big shows coming up. But not only that, the TV shows, but like they're kind of seamlessly rolling everything off in the corner of the screen at the right moments to tell you what's coming up. Like, I didn't really have a problem. It was like, oh, here's what's coming up on Dynamite. And it's just that whoever is in charge of rolling out the graphics chose the perfect time. You know what I mean? To roll out when the graphics showed. So I said, oh, that's coming up. And, you know, then it just doesn't seem as rushed. You know, Dynamite feels very rushed. It feels like nothing sticks. Feels like a lot of the matches are just, you know what I mean? Like, you put the thought of them that you might into like booking a PWG show some weeks, like, you know, if it was a super indie card, with a bigger budget. But, I just think the way Collision's built, just, they tell stories. It's paced well, and you get that action, but the action, they're using all these good matches to build towards something, like, you know what I mean? It doesn't seem like they're just having good matches for the sake of having good matches. At least most of the good matches on Collision are built towards something, whereas on Dynamite, it's just done for the sake to keep eyeballs on the speed, the pace is just done to keep the eyeballs on the TV. Whereas on, it's just, on Collision, it just feels different. It feels like they just they take a step back and let the wrestlers establish their characters and tell stories. It's hard to believe the difference in the pacing because they just Dynamite just it had some really good weeks, but overall it's just like when you sit down and watch a wrestling show, you kind of want to relax and get into it and get into the stories. And with Dynamite, it just feels like you're like oh my god, I'm like there's nothing I can really digest here. It's just content being thrown at me. Whereas on Collision, I feel like I can digest everything and know where things are going and know what's coming up on TV and know who's getting a push and what's coming up. But it's a much more preferable style of booking to what he does on Dynamite, because I don't want both shows to be exactly the same, because that would be, you know what I mean? I think they should feel different, but I just wish, I think if Dynamite could just, step back and do some of the same, find a way to tell stories and get, get characters over and maybe keep that fat, while keeping a brisker pace. But it's too much for me some weeks. It's just like, oh my gosh, it's like, here we go. Buckle up.
Yes. I like the sound bites at the beginning of the show. I like the vignettes. I like the different settings for interviews. I like more frequent, shorter interviews. I'm curious how I'd feel differently about the show format if they flipped Dynamite into this format on Wednesdays and then did Collision on Saturdays the way Dynamite's booked, and also if instead they flipped the talent. Because some of it is, it's a new show. It's been built around Punk and FTR and Powerhouse Hobbs and Miro. It's like there's Ricky Starks. There's these different wrestlers, so that makes the show different. The night of the week is different. It's not the A show in the sense that just by definition it doesn't have as many viewers. So there's so many different things about it besides the format that can color our interpretation or our review of what's working about
right,
it.
Right, it's fresh.
There might be a point.
Fresh talent and a lot of things.
Yeah. And different announcing, different intro music. There's just a lot going on.
Even just them bringing Jim Ross out for one, Grumpy Jim Ross comes out for one segment, and Kevin Kelly's known for reading all these stats on the New Japan shows, and he's tried to bring it over to Collision, and tonight he's reading the stats about how Joe can't go, doesn't do well in matches that go past 10 minutes or 12 minutes, and Jim Ross goes, well, we would have known that anyway without those, something, you know what I mean? We could.
Yeah.
We Joe's a 300-pound man.
Yeah.
I was just.
All right.
He's just so blunt sometimes. It's funny.
Oh, no, he totally doesn't care anymore. He never has in a way, but yeah, it's just full on, uninhibited Jim Ross. And, but he does, he seems like he's in a better place Saturday nights than a lot of times he was on Wednesdays. All right, Sean, let's shift to our second outside correspondent, W Torch contributor, Tony Donofrio. Tony, welcome. Thanks for calling in.
No, thanks for having me. I'm just making the trek back to Pittsburgh, so got as much time as you need.
Sounds good. Pronounce your last name for me, because I've read it in my head in different ways over the years, and then I've heard it, and I want to make sure I'm getting it right.
You got it right, and it's funny, I've had the same conversation with Greg on Wrestling Night in America.
Yeah.
The way you said it, Donofrio is fine. Donofrio is also acceptable. My family, I have some of my family that pronounce it one way, some that pronounce it the other. I'm one of the few that doesn't care because both are technically correct. So I'm good with Donofrio or Donofrio.
And then those are the main pronunciations in my head I was going back and forth with. Well, Tony, thank you so much. Good to talk to you. Sean Raddick, and of course, the co-host here, he'll jump in. We talked to an outside correspondent earlier who our on-site correspondent earlier, who had Darren, who had not attended AEW before, and he was only there because of his 12-year-old son being an AEW fan, which was interesting. I want to get your perspective on things, on overall on the show. Like, what was the main takeaway from attending Collision? With the absence of Punk, but with Danielson and Moxley, Jade Cargill returning, a decent amount of star power on the show too. You know, Samoa Joe in a meaningful match. What was your main takeaway about the experience?
So the funny thing about this is my third trip to Cleveland for an AEW show. I've also been to Charlotte, and I've been to a couple of the Pittsburgh shows. The funny thing, the main takeaway, oddly enough, you brought up all those factors. The one thing that really was weird to me is I don't understand the venue choice. The last few times I was there, they ran the Wolstein Center, which was the Cleveland State University venue, and I want to say that holds around 7,000 people, give or take. Tonight, we were in the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. That thing, it's like the United Center. It seats like 20,000 people, and it was just mind-boggling to me that they – I don't know if there was a scheduling conflict or whatnot, but it was crazy. So there was about 3,500 people there. The crowd, I'm not sure how it came off on TV. Most of the night was engaged. I feel like the main event, the crowd was not as into it because I really believe that it was almost one of the – they should have maybe switched the two tournament matches and potentially put the Roderick Strong match in the main event because it just felt like the crowd knew that Penta didn't have a chance. It was just, like I said, an unusual venue, a decent crowd, like I said, in terms of response and how they were reacting to a lot of the show until the main event. It was just one of those nights where I was just awestruck at how big the building was and how empty it was at the same time. I'm not sure how it looked on television, but that was one of the weird takeaways I had from that. Other than that, like it felt... And I know I was listening to the last call we had on right when I jumped on. It, even though it was in the – I've only been to Dynamite tapings in the past, this did feel a little bit of a slower show, whereas even if you're at a Dynamite in person, they do just keep things going and rolling and rolling and rolling. This felt a little bit more of like a hybrid AEW-WWE show where they even tell you at times, oh, we're in commercial break. I can't ever remember that happening during a Dynamite taping. So some of the stuff that on the last call, that talked about the pacing was definitely noticeable. And then, like I said, I can't understand the choice of why they chose the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse for this because the place seats 20,000 and there was 3,500. The last two times I was at the Wolstein Center, that I want to say there was between 4,000 and 6,000. I think the last time there was 4,500. The time before that, it was like 5,000. And I don't understand the venue change, but those are probably some of the key takeaways I had from that.
Yeah. And, they did an amazing job. We talked about this earlier, making the building look pretty good on TV with the camera angles they chose and the way they clustered the fans. But, man, dropping from, in the 4,000s to under 4,000 on this next visit, it's Saturday night. It's a different context. No Punk. I don't know. But it is an ongoing issue for AEW. It's interesting that, they just, we're at a commercial and that kind of thing, that they're just frank about that. One thing I think, as Sean and I, and you might have been listening, Tony, we're talking about the difference in format between Dynamite and Collision. Dynamite early on, I felt, was a case of we're going to put on a great show for the fans in the arena, and we're pointing a camera at the ring, and you get to watch. And as a Dynamite viewer, you almost felt like you were watching something not always meant for you, but it was cool that you could have a window in to see it. And with Collision, it feels like the crowd is there and they're important, but it's a TV show. It's more video packages. It's more produced. The segments are more varied. It's not just – I don't want to say that Dynamite always felt like a house show because there were a lot of promos and that kind of thing in the ring, or a good dose of those too. But it does feel like Collision being in the audience for it might be a little bit of a different and maybe less desirable experience than Dynamite because so much is happening on the big screen compared to, I think what Dynamite has become known for. What do you think about that framing, Tony?
No, absolutely. Like I was saying, it's Dynamite, and I know the analogies or the, you know, the phrase has been used. It's almost like trying to drink water through a fire hose sometimes, watching Dynamite. As exciting as it can
be,
there's a ton thrown at you. But at Collision tonight, this is the first time I've been to a Collision taping. And you're really spot on when you talk about, you know, there was more video packages, there was more going on backstage. Having said that, that's why I said it kind of felt like a hybrid between Dynamite and then either Raw or SmackDown, because while there was stuff going on backstage, there still wasn't those 3 minutes between every segment that you could tell that you're sitting through a TV break like you would at a Raw or SmackDown taping. So for the most part, I was still entertained. It was still, I feel like I got great value for what I paid. There's still not a lot of sitting around, which I appreciate, because I know sometimes I go to Raw or SmackDown and I feel like the show's over and I feel like, man, I sat there for probably 30 minutes of this 2.5-3 hours I was there. Whereas tonight, there was a couple small breaks, and they might have been 90 seconds at most. But you're pretty spot on with the difference in production. And you can tell even when you're live if you're really paying attention.
Sean, let me throw to you for a question.
I know, Tony, you've obviously been watching AEW since the beginning. Did you go to any of the early shows? I'm not sure, like, just to compare the experience between the early days and now.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh show, I want to say the first Pittsburgh show was, like, the third or fourth. Yeah, I think it was the fourth Dynamite in general.
I got to go to that one.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the one where I know.
In Boston.
I think it was. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, Boston. I think it was what? Washington, Boston, then maybe Philadelphia, then Pittsburgh, something like that. And I was at the Pittsburgh show. And I just remember that was a, like you said, it was nonstop. And it's definitely, you know, as time has gone on, it seems like they're trying to tone things down a little bit and slow it down. But not all the time. I could definitely tell the difference tonight at the Collision taping. The Pittsburgh one I was at for the first one was when the Jericho Appreciation Society and I believe it was the Elite were battling in the hallways at the Peterson Event Center. I talk about venues. I don't want to get started on venues again because that one's one of the worst ones I've ever been to, and it's in my home city. That was the fourth one, and that one, it was. At the time, it felt chaotic but fun, but it was so early in the history of AEW that you just, you know, it was one of those, all right, well, they're still figuring things out. And, you know, at this point, Dynamite still feels like it's trying to race through the show, and Collision has a much better pace. And I'm curious to see if in the coming weeks that's going to change because, I mean, we're only 1 week removed from, you know, Punk being gone. I know. Danielson they're saying he has a lot of input in what they're doing on Collision, and if we're to believe what he said in interviews even before and right after he came over, that he sat under that Vince McMahon learning tree while he was over in WWE. So I guess we're going to find out, you know, if the shows are going to stay similar, or I'd really like to see them sprinkle some of that Collision dust on Dynamite, but I don't know if Tony Khan's going to do that or if he wants to really keep the shows that different.
It seems like one of the things, and maybe it would take a deeper dive to look, is they're going to the same market pretty close, you know what I mean, pretty close together. I know they've come to Boston and Rhode Island, you know, in Connecticut, you know, that areas that are all close together that fans could go to. And it just seems like, is it a matter of diminishing returns where you just can't, you know, draw that bigger crowd? I mean, they're in a really big venue tonight where the Cavs play, but it just seems like they need to figure out a better formula for going on the road and not hitting the same, you know what I mean, the market so close together. It seems like WWE has that down pretty good where they don't overexpose the markets. And it seems like something that's worth looking into with AEW, where they're failing in attendance is one of the reasons, you know, just, you know, people don't want to go back so soon. The live experience I had was fantastic, but do you think based on tonight, like, people would want to go back to that right away? Is it, like, what are the problems you see? Is it just they're going to venues too much, or do you think it has anything to do with the experience itself?
That's a heck of a question. But the funny thing is, Cleveland, this was their first time in Cleveland in about a year. The last time they were in Cleveland was the Punk Mox 3-minute title match. And that was a year ago. So it's been
that's
a year
plenty
for
of
Cleveland.
Time.
Right. I mean, that's what's they've got to be a little bit concerning when you look at the drop in attendance, and even the more odd thing that they would pick the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse when the Wolstein Center would at least look partially full. Next week, I know I'm making the trek again to State College, PA. That's the first time they've been to State College. Now, granted, there's going to be you're going to get some people from Pittsburgh like me. You're going to get some people from Philadelphia. That's the first time they've done Central PA, though. So, and I've been trying to check WrestleTix. Obviously, I'm not going to do that now while I'm driving. But I know that it didn't look like that one was doing big numbers either. So, and I guess what they have to worry about is, you talked about visiting some of the same markets. You would think now that they're running two live shows per week that they would be expanding those markets even more rather than doubling down. And that seems to be the big problem to me, is that you're doing twice as many shows now. You really have to stretch out that calendar. But to my point a moment ago, it's been over a year since they went to Cleveland, and the numbers are down about a grand. So it's something they definitely have to look at. I'm not sure if it's, they lost Punk. This show was probably mostly sold before last weekend, because looking at WrestleTix throughout the week, they didn't make any significant jumps, or, there was nothing that really changed in the past week or so. So it's definitely something that they should be concerned with. I know the TV numbers have at least been steady. I know that, cable was down in general across the country year over year. So they got to be at least okay with how those TV numbers look. But I know typically, if you're to believe that your audience is going to lead to your TV numbers dipping eventually, that hasn't happened yet. But it has to be something that hopefully they're at least keeping their eye on.
Yeah.
Talk about Tony's interaction with the crowd tonight and what the crowd reaction was to him.
So he was out three times in total. He came out before the main tapings, and then he came out again after the main tapings, and then we actually finally decided we tapped out and had enough right before the final Ring of Honor match. The crowd gave him a good response. There was no pushback. There was none of the... none of the CM Punk chants. There was one lone guy maybe halfway through the match or halfway through the tapings tonight who tried to start a chant, and everyone just kind of looked at him. Tony was well received. There was a couple random people wondering where Wardlow was. Remember, this is Cleveland, though. That's where he's from. But by and large, it was just the standard stuff. He came out at the beginning to the Cleveland song that plays at the beginning of the first Major League movie. I can't remember who sings it, and I think it's not like Tony Khan's an old man, but he kind of aged himself on that one, because no one knows that song, and even though it's part of a major movie like Major League, it's the opening credit song, and he came out and he said he always wanted to come out to that, and everyone kind of shrugged. I knew what it was from. Nobody else did, but I'm also a little bit older. The crowd, was by and large, he was optimistic, he was upbeat. The last time he came out was kind of sort of, I don't know if it's going to go on TV behind the paywall or not, but it was kind of sort of dealing with an angle they shot with Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty. Not sure if that's going to hit the paywall version of Ring of Honor or not, but by and large, he was upbeat. There was, like I said, there was no mention of CM Punk, and there was definitely no pushback from the crowd on that, like he got last week in Chicago before he had to kind of talk everyone off the ledge.
How do I put this? What was the the most disengaging moment of the show for the fans in the building tonight?
Most disengaging. Let's see here. I mentioned earlier that there was not a lot of – I don't know how it came off on TV. Didn't feel like there was a lot of heat for the main event. I think everyone knew anyone who's everyone or anywhere, whoever that saying goes, thought Samoa Joe was going over. That seemed like maybe the low point of the night, just because it seemed like there was no heat. Jade Cargill got a great response upon her comeback. I don't think the crowd wanted to see her turn heel. She got a great response when she came out. Other than that, I can't think of anything where the crowd really came off as disconnected, at least in person. Not sure how it came off on television, but like I said, for me, it was the main event that you had Alex Abrahantes jumping around at ringside, trying to get the crowd engaged, and he's jumping. I mean, I was literally front row, and he's jumping around going, come on, let's get behind him, let's help him out, and no one seemed to care. I don't think anyone really believed that Penta was going to win that match, and it didn't matter how much he did. He could have cut his arm off at ringside, and I'm not sure it would have done anything.
Jeez, that's not great. And can you rank who was most over or what the crowd was most into?
The most, I'll tell you what, I'd say Jade probably got the best pop of the night, because obviously a surprise return is going to do that. The crowd was very much into the Roderick Strong tournament match with Darby Allin. I mean, Darby's over with the crowd,
mm-hmm.
So the crowd did pop when he came out. The old baby face limped to the ring. The crowd was really, really behind Darby Allin. They were really getting on Roderick Strong. There was even the chant that was started was Adam left you. And I think it started twice throughout the match. I'm not sure. It sounded loud where I was. I was front row. Like I said, the crowd was really into Darby. They were really against Roddy, and like I said, they even started the "He had him left you" chant twice, and the one time it got pretty loud in there with that chant. So for me, the match of the night, the moment of the night, I would say, like I said, was the initial Jade Cargill pop. But I think they were most into the Roddy and Darby Allin match, and I was kind of surprised they didn't go with that as the main event, because that seems to be where they're telling the best story in terms of the tournament. And But for whatever reason, they decided to throw it in the middle of the show.
What do you think they're going to do with Roderick and Joe?
What do I think they're going to do, or what do I think they should do? I mean, I feel like Samoa Joe is the bigger. Well, I mean, I don't feel like it. I think it's obvious he's the bigger star. I think that Roddy somehow is going to find a way to win the tournament and face MJF at Grand Slam. And then somehow Joe backdoors his way into a match, or maybe MJF challenges him because there's unfinished business, or they got to figure something out. But I think Samoa Joe and MJF is the better pay-per-view match. And I think that Roderick Strong and MJF is probably the better match for Grand Slam, because at least Grand Slam, it seems like they're putting a few things in place for that people are excited about. And you also added that Danielson and Zack Sabre Jr. match to Wrestle Dream as well. So if anything, now that I'm thinking out loud, maybe you do Samoa Joe at Grand Slam, because Zack Sabre Jr. and Danielson now seems to be the big selling point to Wrestle Dream. Maybe they do let Samoa Joe win this tournament and try to get some viewership for Grand Slam, and then the big match for Wrestle Dream is going to be Zack Sabre Jr. and Danielson. So that's funny. I just kind of changed my mind as I was talking to you here, but just thinking about the fact that Danielson has that match, it's Wrestle Dream.
Yeah. Interesting. Tony, is there anything else you want to share with us about the show tonight, your experience?
The only thing that's funny, and I'm not sure if you asked your other correspondent, I know you typically ask about merchandise and things like that.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've been to 3 Pittsburgh shows. I've been to a show in Charlotte, and this is my 3rd one in Cleveland. And I don't understand. Every venue I've been to, it doesn't matter which of the ones I've mentioned, they only seem to run with one merchandise stand. And the line is always wrapped around I hate to say the corner because it's one big circle, but the line is always crazy long. Doesn't matter what venue I go to. And they don't seem to bring a lot of merchandise. And I don't understand. It's almost like they're shooting themselves in the foot,
yeah.
And there's a big opportunity lost there. We're three, four years in. And it seems like they haven't figured out that there's a market out there that really, you know, for the people that come to these shows, that they want to buy stuff. And they only bring five or six different styles of T-shirts. They bring some of the foam fingers or the foam scissors for the Acclaimed. And I don't understand. I don't know why there's not multiple merchandise stands at these events. And it just seems like a lost opportunity because every time I go, even if I were wanting to buy something, I'm not standing in that line. Whereas if I go to a WWE show, there's every 15 yards, there's merchandise stands all throughout the arena. And it doesn't matter what level you're on. It's insane. You have to kind of find the one merchandise stand to go to an AEW show. Just boggles my mind.
We hear that a lot. It boggles my mind, too. I do not understand. It seems like if the audience is out there and they want to buy it, why not figure out a way to deliver it? Or make it available. You know, make it available. Tony, thank you so much. Anything else you want to add before we let you go?
I don't think so. I appreciate, after all these years, finally getting on with you. I know we've talked about doing more, so I'm excited. Sean,
yeah.
It's great to
yes.
talk to you, actually, too, because Sean and I talk quite a bit through text, so great to finally
nice.
Talk to you guys, you know, on a show, and hopefully we'll do it again soon. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome.
Nice.
Thanks,
to
Tony. Appreciate
you,
it. Sean, anything else you want to add before we close out? We've run quite long here.
Trying to think if there's anything else.
You like Danielson's promo? Did you like Danielson's promo?
Yeah.
And Starks?
We didn't talk about Ricky Starks and Danielson. I thought
yeah.
I thought that was really well done. And then Ricky interrupted him, and I liked that. I thought that was really good for both of them. And then the beat down and the Ricky doing the yes chants, I thought that was really well done. A good way to get a big match on the board for the Dream Wave. I keep butchering that.
Wrestle Dream.
I keep, for some reason, I think it's Dream Wave. I don't know why.
I don't know either.
Yeah, Wrestle Dream. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Cool. Yeah, I thought I want to see Danielson and Moxley just be against heels. They can be who they are, but put them against heels. And let fans choose and find a way to shift Yuta and Claudio, if they're still with them in Blackpool Combat Club, into a role where fans, you know, can just cheer them and boo their opponents and not have any complication or nuance.
Yeah, that'd be good too. Because I think they need to this seemed like the first step in making a bigger deal out of Danielson with Punk gone. I think they need to try to make a bigger deal out of him while they still can, you know, with the if he is holding true to that, he's going to step away when his daughter turns 7.
Yeah.
Because they really, you know,
I mean,
replacing Punk is just I was thinking about it before the show today, you know, just can Danielson replace Punk? I mean, he was such a huge deal, and you know, for a while in WWE, but Punk just seems to draw, you know what I mean, draw so much attention. And I don't know if Danielson can draw the same amount, but he's definitely someone they should try to, you know, heavily spotlight. It can't hurt, I don't think, to get him and, you know, kind of maybe pull him away from the Blackpool Combat Club and just make him a singles act.
I was wondering if they were going to go that direction, and then he was wearing, you know, the T-shirt.
That's true.
For Blackpool
so
Comic Club.
No.
So, you know, it doesn't seem like that's
out there recruiting. So.
Exactly, yes. And then he did that. So, yeah.
But,
well, anyway, Sean. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, just about, you know, just, you know, all this attendance issues and so far, just like it's going to be a rough go on Saturday, at least. through the fall, just, you know, people going to not only watching football, but going, you know what I mean? Like, it's just today it's been on since, you know, you got, it seems like college football has star power this year, like in addition to the, you know, the usual powers, like this Deion Sanders story is crazy. You know what I mean? Just what he's doing in Colorado. So it's, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on, like even beyond what it would normally draw. I think it's just college football's got some exciting things going on. So it's, you know, just to try to draw attention away from it for the next few months is going to be really hard for them to do on Saturday night.
I agree, and, you know, I guess that's what DVRs are made for. We'll see if people, if AEW fans feel compelled to watch it on delay in bigger numbers. There's been a little bit of indication of that, but, you know, that's what certainly Tony Khan and the network is hoping for. You'd rather them watch live, but if delay is the best you can do, do that.
Oh, I did get a kick out of the Jay White cutout in the entrance. I wanted to bring that up. I thought that was great. It wasn't there this week.
That is really fun. That was really fun.
That was good.
Yeah. All right, cool. Sean, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Have a good night.
Yep, you too. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Sorry for our technical issues. And we'll be by Monday night after Raw. Thanks, everybody.